Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Humble Coach Podcast. My name is Coach Porrick, and we are up on episode number 57 now, folks. So thanks for joining us all. In today's episode, folks, I got a great chance to talk to a fantastic personal trainer based in Galway. Her name is Cathy Stritch, and I hope you guys really enjoy the conversation that we had today. All right, folks, so welcome back to the Humble Coach Podcast. We're up on episode number 57. I'm your host, Coach P. But today I'm joined by Cathy Stritch. Cathy, thanks for joining me.
Oh, thank you for having me, Porrick. How are you?
Not too bad. So, folks, I'm sure a lot of you guys, well, some of you guys will at least know about Cathy and her great work as a personal trainer for the last number of years. And it's great to get a chance to chat to her. But Cathy, first of all, I suppose the start point really is to try and find out what your background in training and in life in general, I suppose, and where you come from and the whole lot, but how you then also got into coaching and kind of a couple of the reasons maybe why you kind of took that step and that direction, if that's okay.
Okay, yeah. So I suppose where I'm from, first of all, is Roscommon. A lot of people don't know that. They think I'm from Galway. Yeah. I live in Galway. But I'm a proud Roscommon woman. So I suppose growing up, I wouldn't have been, surprisingly enough, that into sport at all. In fact, when I was in school, I absolutely hated PE. I used to try and dodge it all the time. I just didn't like it. So yeah, it's kind of funny. I played a bit of Gaelic football when I was younger and stuff like that. But, you know, after school, I actually left, after secondary school, I went straight to New York, actually. And I had planned to go for a couple of months, and I ended up staying there for 7 years. But a big part of growing up for me was in America, and you know, that was a great time for me. I did bartending and, you know, the usual jobs you see people, expats doing. And actually, when I think about it, in terms of where I am now with coaching, it seems so opposite working in a bar. But actually, I draw on that a lot now. It's, you know, just learning to deal with people and, you know, coming across different characters and people with different backgrounds and stories. So it probably was setting me up without me even knowing it. So, yeah, when I returned to Ireland then in, I think it was 2007, and I kind of didn't know what I wanted to be doing with myself and, you know, just slotted into whatever job I could get. And then, so I ended up in accountancy, which is insane because I hated maths in school. And I hated my job. And it was funny because, you know, it was the good job, you know, it had the pension and it had the VHI and it was permanent because we were in a recession. And so outside of that, I started training in a boot camp class. And well, before that, I actually did a bit of kickboxing with Pete Foley. I don't know if you know him.
Yeah.
That was my first kind of step into, okay, now I'm going to be into fitness. And liked that. And then I joined just a boot camp class. And I loved it. I really enjoyed the class. I became addicted to it. And, you know, I spent a good number of years at that. And I just found that I started looking at my life, I suppose, in general, saying, what do I want to do? I had a big itch because I knew I wasn't happy in the job I was in. I just really didn't like it. It wasn't for me at all. I felt boxed off. And, you know, I used to think, is this it now for the rest of my life? And just really didn't like it. And it just all seemed to click where I thought, well, I like this. I'm good at it. And I knew that if I had started from nowhere and became really fit with no background, really, and could do all the things that I didn't think I could do, I thought, well, I can show people how to do this. I can teach them how to do it. And I knew that I would really enjoy it because I loved it. So I kind of convinced the guy who I was taking classes with to hire me. I kept saying, you know, you got to get me out of this job. Please give me a job. And yeah, so eventually I remember doing a warm-up one time, and I was shaking from head to toe because I suppose right now we take for granted how easy it is to stand up and instruct a room full of people. It's no problem to me now. Whereas to just, you know, I remember the guy saying, just, you know, get them to do a couple of jumping jacks. And I was like, oh my God, I can't do that. But it was grand, like, and it gave me so much confidence. That was the thing, like, I would never have been able to stand up in front of a room of people, and now I can. But yeah, so that's where I started off, and then eventually, you know, I got qualified, and yeah, in 2014, I went out on my own. I took the classes down to where I come from in County Roscommon, in a small village, and I started off there, and so that's 5 years, almost 6 years ago, and it's still going strong. So that's the long-winded answer as to how I got into it.
Yeah, so that's excellent. I think there's a few things I can resonate with absolutely there straight away. I suppose I'm from Mayo, even though I've been living in Galway for, like, I think 20 years now at this stage, like, kind of on and off. So I came in like 2001 and then kind of didn't really leave for a long, long time, all right, to be fair. So I can appreciate that. But the a couple of particular points on that. Just, like, I think there's one major one there, and a lot of people really don't take this into account sometimes, that I suppose my background was, like, playing lots of sports, and I was into coaching from kind of nearly day dot. Like, I was thrown into boxing coaching at 16 and 17, and just loads of things like that. So, but then I nearly drifted away from it for a few years and kind of stepped off completely. Yeah. But that kind of situation, I suppose, when you were in New York, where you're bartending, or you were dealing with those kind of people, that's very much, like, I completely appreciate, that's coaching essentially. And it's because you're constantly having to work with and build relationships with people. And especially if you're working in a particular place for any length of time at all, even if it's a handful of months, immediately you gain good relationships with those kind of people. And you start becoming aware of, okay, what do I need to do next to make them a little bit happier, or make them make a bit more progress, or whatever it is. And especially when it comes to the relationships along with your workmates and with your managers and things like that, it makes a huge, huge difference. And New York is definitely a serious enough spot for that. So it gives you a really, really good grounding, absolutely. But a second piece that you mentioned there is, I think, and this happens with a lot of people, is they might get kind of stuck in a particular point in their lives, and they're kind of like, okay, I'm not too sure what I'm at. But like you mentioned there, not have played a huge amount in the past, but you may have had some strong natural ability that didn't have an avenue to really outlet itself and to come on, to open up. And so it just took that bit of extra time to really develop it and go, okay, do you know what? This is actually what I need to do and what I'm good at. Not that you were bad at accounting, I'm sure. I'm sure you're quite good at accounting, but... I think that's one of the things that a lot of people will take for granted, that they go, okay, I'm stuck in a particular place now, and this is what I do. And I'm like, well, that's fine, but you also, it doesn't mean that you can't, at any particular age, take up a new pastime, be it fitness or exercise or whatever it is, and really show some proficiency in it, because it's likely that you will have it in your genes, essentially, that you'll have really good brothers or sisters or uncles or aunts or whatever that were quite good, so, and quite physically fit and whatever. So there is, I think, some avenues there where people really should explore a lot more, and it's down to us as coaches to try and find ways to help them find that kind of love for it, find that route, I suppose, you know.
Yeah, I think as a coach, a big part of me is trying to instill belief. I like to be the person to believe in them, because oftentimes people don't believe in themselves. And so, you know, as you said, some people might just have that natural ability. Some people might, and some people might not enjoy it. And there is no point, as I always say to my crew, if you don't enjoy it, you know, don't do it. Life's too short to be doing something that you're miserable at. But in terms of work, especially even with clients, I talk to them, and they might, even one-on-one, you get to know them a bit more, and they'll say, oh, I hate my job. And I always try to say, well, what are you good at? What do you like? What would you do if you didn't get paid? What would you do gladly for free? And that's kind of the avenue they should be going down, in my opinion, for happiness. But yeah, I totally agree in terms of people may have that natural ability, but I think the reason why they don't know that yet is because they don't believe in themselves. You know, a lot of people are so hard on themselves and think, I can't do that. It wouldn't be like everybody that I have ever come across. That's their first reaction. If I ask them, you know, I'm doing Tough Mudder, or I'm doing, oh no, I wouldn't be able to do that. And it's straight away when you tease it out of them, and it's often a jump of faith on their behalf. It's a leap of faith. But when you get them to commit, and when they actually show up and do something and know that they can do it, it drip feeds into other areas of their lives. And then they think, well, maybe I could switch out of this job that I don't like, you know, because I didn't think that I could get fit and be able to do a push-up, but now I can, you know. So I find that...
No, I completely agree. I think one of the biggest things is there's the people that are that do have that really, really ingrained belief. Any of the athletes are like really high level athletes that we've met or we've worked with or whatever. They definitely they've had to practice that though. That hasn't like come naturally. So they like any autobiography you read of any of these amazing people, they all have huge self-doubt. Like I have self-doubt right now. You have the same. I think we forget about that an awful lot, that everybody is going through the same self-doubt. Some people are just better practiced at kind of hiding.
100%. You know, what I often tell clients as well is, because I know exactly what's going through their head when they come into a class. I know this is not a high level thing, but it's just a group class. But to some people, it is massive to walk through the doors of a hall or wherever I hold my classes. They don't know anybody and they are hugely intimidated by, you know, the burpee queen in the corner that's absolutely feasting out and, you know, lifting the heavy weight, and they are so intimidated. But I always say that, you know, during the warm-up or when I'm explaining, you know, exercises, I always give them an adaptation, you know, something that would suit them. But I always say to them, you know, just because the girl beside you is doing 50 burpees in a minute, they started somewhere too. Like, and if people often apologize, I find, saying, oh, they're kind of at the end of the class, sometimes a brand new start, you'll see almost apologizing, saying, Jesus, I'm so unfit, Kathy. And that's fine. You're supposed to be unfit if you're coming to me.
Exactly.
And it's to try and get people to relax into that and not feel so intimidated and say, it's absolutely fine. Everybody started somewhere. Like top level athletes, you know, they don't just wake up like that. You do have to work for it, you know, and people need to take the pressure off themselves and not feel like they need to be, you know, some sort of high elite athlete, you know, overnight. It's not about that. It's about just going to your own pace, always just taking your time, and then eventually you will get there. You'll see progress, which is relative to you, you know. But I always point that out to them, that people that you look around and admire, they started somewhere too, you know. And I try to always remind them of that. And yeah, we all have self-doubt, but to use it in the correct way, you know, use it to push you, I suppose, to be better.
But absolutely. I think that brings us nicely onto the next point, I suppose. And one of the main things I like to try and look at when I'm coaching somebody, or I'm building a plan or building a relationship with people, I'm looking to try and find out where they can kind of really release their own inner kind of hero, and what kind of story are they telling themselves. And we all obviously have challenges with building our own amazing story and our perfect day and things like that, because a lot of the time we may not necessarily think about it. We'll daydream about it in parts, but we may not go, okay, I'm going to write it down exactly what da da da, and know and kind of really drill that into us and really practice a huge amount. But that's one of the challenges, I suppose, that I suppose I don't journal an awful lot. The odd time I might, but I suppose I'm the same as everybody. We've had difficulties in the past and when you're younger and different stuff going on. But I suppose I'm just generally grateful. Like I don't have to be overly grateful. I'm extremely grateful all the time for my situation. Like I've never had huge, unbelievable loss or things like that. I haven't had a multitude of mad issues and major health problems and things like that. I have 10 brothers and sisters. We've obviously had ups and downs, but like I'm really grateful that I have an interesting, good relationship with all of them, and we're all in kind of good form and things like that, and especially with the current situation going on. But I think that's one of the big ones, that when people may not have that awareness of what's really, really important in their lives and what they can be really grateful for. And even on a very simple level, it's in, if you wake up in the morning and you're gonna, okay, I can have my particular cup of coffee, or I don't even drink coffee anymore, but I have my cup of tea. And for me, that's huge because I have the luxury for all of that. And it's a fleeting kind of moment, but I'm very conscious that I'm extremely lucky to have this ability to talk to you now, to have my cup of tea, to have my phone, to have all of these mad things. And I think when people have the awareness that, do you know what, there's actually a lot of good stuff going on for me. Now, that's one of the difficulties if you'll probably be able to speak to this quite well, but if you go through a particular tragedy, it gives you a much more heightened awareness of your current situation and what's there to be grateful for. And it's much easier then for people to really push on and to really express themselves. And that's where we have people who may be quite unfit, or they're very conscious of coming into those kind of classes. They get extremely nervous about it because they have been so closed off, and they've allowed themselves to get clouded up in that lack of awareness that there is so much potential for them, you know? But I think that's one of the biggest ones. I don't know if you could speak a little bit about about gratitude and how you could use it, and I suppose how you currently, you presently use it for really empowering your clients and yourself.
Yeah, gotcha. Absolutely. I mean, I wasn't always tuned into that. I think it's sort of a practice. Like when I look back now and think of the things that I used to complain about, I mean, you know, maybe it's just the 20 something or mentality, and oh my God, my life is so hard and I have no car, and just, you know, everything was just so difficult and woe is me. But I don't know if it just comes with age and life experience, obviously, but for me, yeah, 100%. And it's funny because just last night, I was doing the burpee challenge, which we might talk about a little later. Mm-hmm. I just had one of those days yesterday where, and you can have those days where I just was very demotivated, I don't want to do this. And when I train, I kind of tune into what's going on in my head, like what's the voice saying, because I think it's one of the only times that you can listen without distractions, because we have the phone in front of us, we have the baby running around, the TV is on, or whatever. It's very noisy nowadays, and it's very hard to listen to what's going on in your head, and usually it's when you're trying to go to sleep. But when I train, you know, it's distraction free, and straight away what I was thinking when I eventually got out and started getting off my ass and says, right, get this done, the first thing that was coming into my head was like, why did you spend the whole day whinging in your head about doing 7 minutes of burpees? Like, burpees are hard, fine, but 7 minutes of work. And I was straight away drawn to, you know, thinking about people that are fighting for their lives. And that for me is always what I go back to. I think of, you know, I did work once upon a time raising money for cystic fibrosis. Now, I didn't have anyone in my family, Jesus, that was really eye-opening for me, you know, the condition. People struggle to breathe, and then you're going to complain about doing 7 minutes of burpees and you're completely healthy. It just really always puts things into perspective. And, you know, obviously, so that's kind of what gets me through is that when I am having a difficult day, and you will have difficult days, and you'll have days where you feel sorry for yourself, that's really what I bring it back to, is to say, you know, you are here and you are alive. And that's what you just mentioned. When you get up in the morning, really for me, it's as simple as that. If you woke up, that is it. That is all you need to start a good day. And obviously,
you're ahead of the game already. Yeah.
Yeah. I have spoke openly on my social media and stuff about the death of my sister. You know, she had cancer. I sat with her for weeks, watching a person deteriorate. So when you have a front row seat of that, you understand exactly what life is about. Like, the handbag no longer matters, you know, the being the best in the class and doing more burpees, that no longer matters. When you see somebody there and you see how fragile it is and how quick it can all end. And it, you know, the person who pissed you off or cut you off when you're driving. Like, I have a hard time understanding how someone can get upset over. I really do. And there's people in my life, I won't name them, who get, oh, the tire is flat. Oh my God. It's all, and I'm like, really? Like, just chill. But yeah, I am really tapped into gratitude. And again, I do like to say to people, though, it's, I think when my sister died first, I was hypersensitive. I couldn't bear to talk to someone who was going to complain to me because their makeup fell and broke. You know, it was really, Jesus Christ, that's, you have no clue of what hardship is. But then as time goes on, you know, as humans, we do that and we're a bit, you get back into the complaining and, you know, but in general, I am very, very grateful for all I have. And for me, it's about the small things in life. You know, I got to see my nephews, so my sister's kids, I got to see them the other evening. And I mean, this sense of relief and the, oh my God, like that's all it is about for me. You know, life is very, very short. You don't know how long you're going to be here. And for me, it's just be grateful for all of the things you have and stop trying to want material things. For me, it's just, that's a personal thing and each to their own, but for me it does not bring happiness, you know. So yeah, definitely I'm a strong believer on, if you can at all, if you're in a bad place or in a negative headspace, and again, I always allow people to be that way. You know, if you feel that way, you feel that way. You can't have someone tell you your feelings aren't valid, and if someone feels that way, that's fine. But I think if you can practice, you know, there is a lot to be grateful for. If you can, you know, wake up and have your health, that's really the best that you can wish for, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's going to bring us on and to, I suppose, the next kind of, and this is a big one. And you mentioned about the fundraising for cystic fibrosis before and the passing away of your sister and stuff, but when you look at the likes of the Tough Mudder and Team Stretch and stuff like that, when I look at the actual fundraising mounts, I'm like, oh my God, that's so much, like, it's so good.
I know.
And what I found mad was, and I remember distinctly watching it at the time, and I know Pat fairly well as well a little bit, but like, but the energy that came from that and the amount of people that really got involved, and I suppose that resonates quite well with people needing each other to find that bit of a hero, an inner hero, because when we're on our own journey, it's quite difficult. And if we haven't had positivity in great amounts in our lives, then we don't know how to find it. Like, as in, it's quite dark, it's quite foggy, and we don't really know which way to go. And we might go in different directions to try and find that. But when you have interesting events like that, like Tough Mudder and stuff like that, that are highly empowering for general people, like, that may not be massively athletic, they may not be all of this, but there's such a mixed bag of people that you have no choice but to be exposed to it, to different people that you normally wouldn't probably hang out with. And you're like, oh, Jesus, this person's miles ahead of me, or this person's really flash or whatever. So you don't have any choice. You're doing it for a common purpose. And I think that's one of the big ones. That allows a huge amount of people to have huge memories, and that means immediately then that's a really strong legacy going forwards. As in, you've done stuff like your time in New York, for example, that's going to be part of your legacy no matter what. Like, you're going to have people that we may not think remember us in New York or whatever, but they do a little bit, and they will for going forwards. And I think things like Team Stretch, for example, we'll talk about in just a second, but that is a huge, huge part of giving people opportunities to show what they're made of and to really empower themselves to make a big change, you know? Can you talk a little bit about that experience?
Yeah, so, first of all, fundraising, I really enjoy. It's something I feel passionate about, and, you know, it's a difficult thing to do, and people don't always want to put up on their social media and ask for money and things like that. But for me, I just feel it's you know, our, it's our duty to help and give back and all of that. So it is something that I would have no qualms in pushing, I suppose. But I understand not everybody wants to do that. But I think, you know, it's, you need to have, you'll hear people say this term all the time, but what's the why? You know, there has to be a strong enough why. And so when I started my classes in Clonfad, where I'm from, you know, I had experienced it in Galway and been a part of teams like that, and did fundraising and did the whole Tough Mudder thing. And so I came to my community and, they, you know, not a lot of them would have done anything like that. It's a very small community, but it's just a village. When I came down, the first time I said, right, let's do something. And I think we did the Mayo Mud Run, and there may have been maybe 20 of us. And to them, it was massive. So to try and get one person on board, I think I just says, right, I'm going to do the Mayo Mud Run. And I went for the people that are, you know, the risk takers
a bit. Yeah.
Yeah. They'll do it. So I roped them in and was like, right, put it on your page, put it on your social media. And they're a bit, no, I don't, everyone will be looking, just do it. Don't care what anyone thinks. And I think people, there's, you know, there's a thing at play called tribe mentality. I'm sure you've heard of that thing. It's like people want to be a part of something. People enjoy being a part of something. And oftentimes, you know, they mightn't be getting that at home, you know. This is kind of veering off subject, but I wanted to just mention this is one of the biggest lessons I've ever taught in life was one time when I was coaching in the older job. And I was quite new to coaching, and a girl came in and she was very, you know, standoffish, very cold. And, you know, no matter what I tried to do, she just seemed to be angry. And, you know, at the end of the class, when she left, I said to the guy I was working with, Jesus, more or less, what's wrong with her? What did I do? What's her problem? And, you know, I admit no problem saying in saying that, you know, I was a bit offended nearly. But the guy said to me, oh, you don't know what's going on in her life. You don't know, you know, she could be at home in an abusive relationship. You don't know. And when they come to our gym or to me, that should be the best 45 minutes or hour of her day. And so I carried that forward with me. And it's always stood with me that, like, when the people are with me, I hope that that's the best hour of their day, if not their week, you know? And so back to the team stretch and the challenge, like, that's really what I try to remember is that, you know, maybe they don't have that tribe mentality. Maybe they're a bit lonely. And so I want to be that vessel for them to come on board and be a part of something, no matter who they are. And as you said, they may not be someone you'd hang around and you'd choose to be friends with in your day-to-day life. But when you are with us, we're all the one. There's no difference. And that's kind of where I started. So we did the Mayo Mud Run. We raised money for the national schools. So it's nice to start local. Now, the other thing I'll say is my community, the small community, you cannot beat it. They are so supportive. You know, they are all behind you no matter what. And so, you know, that was the first thing we did. And then obviously people straight away were kind of seeing photos and they were, oh, I wish I had done that now. And I said, well, do it the next time then. So after that, then we did we do Tough Mudder first? So my sister got a brain tumor in the meantime. And she never really was doing my classes in the early days. But when she got sick, she had a brain tumor. She had it removed. And she kind of, you know, was on her way to being fit again. And she joined my classes also. And she had always said she'd like to do Tough Mudder. And I had done one in the meantime in Galway. And she couldn't do it because she was sick at the time. She was getting chemo and everything, and she vowed she'd always do it with me. And so in the meantime, unfortunately, her husband tragically lost his life. So that was a big shocker for us all. And, you know, after that, you know, Elaine, my sister, very much wanted to be fit for her children. And, you know, she fought back and said, right, I have to be fit here. And she became addicted to my classes. She was coming twice a day, and I couldn't get enough of her. And so then we said, right, let's do Tough Mudder. And on that occasion, I think I got 42 people to sign up. So it grew a bit bigger. And she did it with us. And, you know, she really was, her husband had just passed away. So a lot of her friends came on board because she was doing it. And, you know, she had had so much on her plate. She'd been through brain cancer. Her husband had passed away. She had two small children. And a lot of people were like, well, if Elaine's doing it, we'll all do it. And that was kind of the first time we had the Team Stretch t-shirts. So we had those blue Team Stretch t-shirts. So that time we raised money for Pieta House. Just, you know, a lot of people in the community were affected by suicide. And so we raised money for Pieta House in memory of a local guy. And I also remember my sister during that tough mother. And she was so full of life and she was shouting and messing, saying, it's great to be alive. You know, we jump into the ice, the skip of ice and Tough Mudder. And she was like, it's great to be alive. She was a messer. And, you know, we had such a fun time doing that. And not to mention the after party. So we raised, I think it was 15,000 that time, which was huge. And because I think every 1,000 that you raise for Pieta House, you know, it covers a course of counseling sessions. So the way we kind of framed it is, you know, to push people to raise money, I kind of phrased it that way, that every 1,000 we raise saves a life. So we got through that. And then, so that was July. And the following February, my sister passed away. So she went from that fit in February, in July, pardon me, of 2016, full of life, doing Tough Mudder, and then cancer returned in October, and unfortunately she passed away in February of the following year. So for me then, you know, both of them had then passed away, which is obviously very tragic and unheard of, really, a young couple. My sister and I had been on a committee to try and build a local playground. So it was a girl in my class, actually, who I was doing the board, vision board. And a girl in my class did the vision board. And she said, you know, she side messaged me and said, I always wanted to do a playground in the community. And there was difficulty getting one up. And committees had been formed, but they never got anywhere due to not having a site and different problems that they kept running into. So she put it on her vision board. And at the time, my sister and I joined the committee because we said, well, you know, the vision board, we better get involved. And there was a huge turnout. But after Elaine got sick, she left the committee and it all kind of fell apart. There was no movement and we just left it be. So forwarding on again to after Elaine died, she died in February. And in, I think it was April, I said, okay, I need to do something. And that's just how I dealt with it. And I think people will resonate with this if you've had tragedy and stuff. In the beginning, you just want to be busy. You want to keep going. And just, you know, keep me busy here before I crack up. Yes. So I threw myself into, I said, okay, let's do it again. Because I know Tough Mudder works. And I knew that people would take inspiration from her having done it with me the year before. And, you know, it was phenomenal that we raised 15,000 that time for Pieta House. So I said, right, let's do it again. And then I was trying to think, what will we do it for? Because back to that, you know, we need a why. We need a good, solid reason. What are we going to do it for that will make people join in? I called the girl who was the chairperson of the committee, which had since, you know, fell apart. And I said to her, I had a strong belief. I said, I really feel like we can raise a lot of money. I believe that we can do it. I believe that it's really about getting enough people involved. So if one person is trying to raise 100,000, let's say, that's very difficult. But if you can encourage and get people to buy into what you're doing and your why, if the more people that you can get, you know, and the onus is on them, they buy into it. They are passionate to raise the money. They're a part of the team. So I called the girl who was the chairperson, and she was absolutely, absolutely go for it. You know, we'll do it too. And so it was born. The idea was born, you know, it was only 2 months after Elaine's passing. So I put it out there, and, you know, I had my boot camp, my girls in Clonfad, they're amazing. Straight away, I'm in. And they started signing up. So I went at it from that angle to, we need as many people as possible to sign up. And our goal was to raise 100,000, which was quite lofty, obviously, especially being from a small community. It's a really small village, as I said, and people are, you know, I suppose, taking from the same pot. And that was a worry, saying, you know, if five people in the one family, how are they going to raise money? So anyway, we signed up. We had 300 people. More, I think there was more than 300. It got a bit out of control. I couldn't even know how many people there was. So we did it in July of 2017. So April, May, June, July. So in 4 months, we fundraised, and people really took it on. You know, people in neighboring towns, you know, they did everything. There was clothes sales, there was a tractor pull, there was everything. People just bought into it. And obviously there was, you know, the tragic story behind it. People wanted to do something, you know, people want to help. And, you know, the fact that Elaine and Pa had passed away and we were trying to build a playground in their memory, you know, people were so behind it. We had people from our community that lived in Australia donating 500 euros. It was, you know, it was immense, really. And in 4 months, we had hit the 100,000, but people didn't know. I didn't tell them. But when I look back and I think 100,000 in 4 months, it's just astounding. But yeah, I think it was probably August, September time that we had a night out and we announced the final amount was 111,000 raised in their memory. And, you know, the team stretch thing to me is, you'll see it on my stories, they wear those t-shirts with pride. They were so happy to be a part of that. You know, the original team stretch was on that run that we did with my sister, and the day of her funeral, as we come up the steps, bringing her to the church, they all had the team stretch top on. And, you know, they buy into that. You know, they have such pride in it. And, you know, we've kind of retired since. I haven't done that was nearly the and I said, no, I'm not doing anything again for a long time now. But when I look back, it was just phenomenal. And, you know, we're in the final stages now of finalizing the plans for the playground. So it will be built very soon. So it's amazing.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, like, that's a phenomenal story. And even the numbers there are kind of mind-boggling. You're like, oh my God, that's 25,000 a month. Like, oh, that's a lot of business. Like, let's keep going. That's very strong. And for, especially for a small community, but I think that's a huge thing from on two levels. From a coaching point of view, we can talk about it in a second, but I suppose on just a very general private view, like for everybody, it's finding causes that resonate with you is going to be a huge catalyst for change. And like you mentioned, the people that somebody would come into your classes I've had the same experience. People come into your classes and they're very tentative and very nervous, and we just have to kind of find what works and we have to find out about them first and find out really about their background and what happened and what's going on, without getting obviously mad personal. But like, a lot of the time that stuff's going to pop up in our lives because it happens to all of us, you know, whether it's a serious tragedy or whether it's just something banal and simple that might not look massive, but it is something that bugs them and they need to go for it. And I think that's a huge thing that for all of us, we just need a consistent reminder to, if we want fuel, then we have to find out, we have to get our fuel, appropriate fuel for us, rather than just trying to go with keeping up with the Joneses and I have to be part of this. It's like, no, you need to find out what type of a tribe you need. You might need a massive tribe, you might need a very small handful of people, which is fine. But it's a big one finding that. And I think that's a huge thing for all of us to just be remembering quite regularly.
Yeah. I think even the knock-on effect then of, you know, it's all good and well raising the money, but people's lives, those 300 people, who knows who never had the belief in themselves.
What way they went, exactly.
I know it, because there were people there who, they cried getting over the finish line, because they did it for the reason and for the why, you know? but they probably never would have done it only for that. You know, there was people that were friends with Elaine's husband that wouldn't have been fit at all. And they did it because, you know, goddamn, they weren't going to not do, you know what I mean? Hell would freeze over before I'd let them down. And but for me, I think for those haven't found that tribe and from them taking part in that, I feel like it has changed their life, which is phenomenal, you know? When you put yourself out there, you know, obviously people were terrified to do it and it was way out of their comfort zone. Easy for me because I'd done it a couple of times, but for people it was massive. It was massive and it just taught them. And I think that's why you should try and do things that you're scared of. Because what is the worst that can happen? As I said to them, look, if you do it and you feel like I'm not able to do it, fine, just step off, you know, turn back, come off the course, there's no pressure. But of course people don't do that. They keep going. You know, the heart is bigger than, you know, anything, and you will keep going. But when you teach yourself that, you have to step outside the comfort zone to do that, to take that risk. And when you jump and take the risk and see, actually, I've been doubting myself for the wrong reason, like there was no need for me. I did it. I got through it. Why was I doubting myself? That trickles into all areas of life. You know, that will tell the person, stop saying I can't do things. Stop saying I'm incapable of switching my job. Stop saying I'm incapable of joining that class or, you know, trying CrossFit. You know, people might be intimidated, but you know, if you can find a way to just show yourself and do something that scares you, and most likely you'll do it and get through it. It really has a massive impact for people, I believe.
I think so too. I think, and this is where I suppose when it goes to the coaching, from our point of view, it's huge the amount of ways that we can utilize that to really try and help people as much as possible. Because like you mentioned there, so we'd say the likes of those challenges or the likes of any of the big events or anything like that, or even if it's something like that, they just join the class. I suppose the main thing I'm trying to get at is the language that we use and the energy that we have is going to be the apps. It's our main tool. It's our main weapon, and we have to use it as regularly as we can. And I think that's where sometimes we can get kind of bogged down with like, oh, okay, well I need to be much more scientific, or I need to be about this. And you know, I need to worry about such and such. Whereas no, like our words, like I look at any of the online clients that I have at the moment, and every time they pop up with a little notification, I get a really excited feeling. I'm like, oh, this is great. But the same as I would if somebody did a movement really well in the gym, or they did whatever, or their nutrition is better, whatever. Like that stuff is a huge, huge fuel for me, and I'm sure yourself as well. But it's the enthusiastic language and the adventurous kind of a sense that we have for those people and for people that we want to see. We've seen this people making success before, having huge success before, and growing massively as people. And it allows us to be more creative and more interesting with our language and more mad about our adventures or whatever. And I think I definitely know that any coaches that I've worked with that have had that sense of enthusiasm for life and has made me so much more comfortable as a partner, as a person being coached by them. And I think that's one of the big ones that at the moment, especially with what's going on in kind of current situation, it's about bringing back safe enthusiasm, but for everybody and anybody really, it's just a case of getting them back to, okay, look, this is not the same. It's not going to be the same, but that doesn't mean that we can't still have the same creativity and the same optimism and the same positivity. But I think that's where, like I was speaking a little while back about the challenges, and it's literally just finding new challenges for a new environment. That's going to be the tough thing, but that's our business. You know, that's what we're built for, I suppose, as coaches.
Yeah. Even just back to what you're saying, you know, in the early days, I had a bit of, you know, imposter syndrome going, you know, I didn't go to college. I say I went to the college of life. I went to New York and I learned a hell of a lot. But, you know, sometimes it can be hard as a coach, and you think, oh my God, they have degree after degree. And you know, there is obviously place for that, and obviously you need to know what you're doing, and you need to understand the physical body and the movements and the safety of your clients. But I really think, for me, it's exactly what you said. It comes down to that language, that enthusiasm, the belief. Again, as I mentioned before, you know, you don't know, as I said, what goes on in people's lives behind closed doors. Maybe nobody is encouraging them. Maybe nobody is believing in them. And, you know, that's my job. That's what I feel is my role, is to encourage people. And yes, you can. And you do fit in here, and you do belong here. It's oftentimes that's what people need the most, you know. And yeah, definitely these times are challenging, and, you know, things have changed a lot. But I do believe that people are seeing the value in just the simple things in life again. You know, people are taking up walking, and, you know, people are quite intimidated, even with my online program as well. I do my online programs, and you know, I do a workout for them every single day. But I always say, look, don't be intimidated. Just walk, just move, just get out and do what you can do. Like, it's fine. Give the workouts a go, but don't feel intimidated that, you know, A, B, and C is doing 6 rounds, but I'm only doing one. You know? But it can be quite hard to get people to do that. I try to bluntly have a chat about the ego, you know. And when we were doing our challenges online, you know, the burpee challenge and AMRAP challenge and stuff, and you'll see people that are confident in their own abilities because they've been doing it for a while. And that's the beauty of exercises. It makes you very confident. Going back to what I said, it gives you the belief when you achieve something. And so some people are quite well versed in that. And so when I set up a challenge, they're on it, and they want to tell the world, I got 6 rounds or I got 110 burpees, and they're proud of what they're doing. And I say, well done to them. However, then you will have people who feel, you know, I can't post that because she got 100 burpees in 5 minutes, but I only got 20. And the last burpee challenge that I did, myself and my partner were, every night we look at the snaps coming in and stuff. And there was one girl that we loved the most because she was really struggling, but she kept doing it. And maybe an average score would have been 60 burpees, we'll say, in 4 minutes. And she might have been getting 20. But she was putting it up there, and I was so behind her. Good girl, you know, fair play to you. And that's the thing, is people will side message me and say, I'm watching your challenge, I'd love to do it, but I'm not able to do that. And I always write back and say, you absolutely are. You just do it at your own pace, you know. And the ego, you've got to ask yourself why you're busting your ass trying to get so many numbers. It's all about slowing things down in your workouts, and everything is, you know, stop trying to compete the person beside you, like quieten that ego. And even for myself, when I had a baby in 2018. I don't know how I forgot that, but 2018, and after I came back, like, it was such a shock to the system. I mean, your abs have separated, and you go back and you can't even do a push-up, and I couldn't do, you know, early days. I was quite shocked, and it was like a good dose of reality, and it was like, get off your high horse. And I laughed, but oftentimes people, you know, get upset by that. They get really frustrated and, I can't do it. And, you know, everyone else is way better. I laughed. I roared laughing because I was, the more I couldn't do it, I was like, oh my God, I can't do a push-up. But the lesson I took from that, and what I share or try to instill in my clients now, is be humble. You know, just quieten the ego. You don't need to be the best in the room. You just need to go at your pace, and you will get there. And so I always do that, you know, from doing a class and it's AMRAP, I'm like, just step to the side and take a break and take a drink, and that's how you'll get there. I think people feel very pressurized when they step into a gym, that I'm not going to be able to stop here and I'm going to have to keep going. And that's not the case. Like, you can march to the beat of your own drum, you know. I hope that that's what people will bring forward from these times, is, you know, everyone peels it back to simplistic, just movement and walking, and, you know, start simple, you know?
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I think there's a couple of things that have kind of touched me there, that when you talk about working of our own kind of speed and our own personal need for the amount of fitness that we need or whatever it is of a particular day. And I think of like I mentioned earlier on, I think of all of the great sports people that we know and the great phenomenal world stars and the whole lot. They're all very individual people. Even if they're in a team sport or anything like that, they all have their own nuance of what they need to go. I've heard it often and we'll all attest to it, I think, but high level performers nearly look like they're at slow motion or something like that. They're on their own kind of level. So bringing back to kind of, I suppose, normal Joan and Joseph or whatever it is, you know, we all have to focus on what level that we want to achieve and what level we can work at. And we have to have our own slow speed, if that makes sense. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not the same as you. So I can't anticipate the same as you are. I haven't got the same qualities as you have. You haven't got the same qualities I have, whatever. But I think that's the mentality in recent times, there's been, okay, I have to have a very heavy team orientation, or I have to be able to get to this point to be a really high performer in everything. And I have to copy such and such and such and such. And I think that's complete BS, because if you're the best people that that inspire us are those that have those little quirky nuances that have found, they're like, look, this is my way of doing things. This is how I work. Sound. And this is what I need today. This is not what I need tomorrow, whatever. And I think that's one of the big ones, that the more we can individualize, our view of ourselves, and really take upon us that, like, yeah, we are, this is what we are. Like, this is all we have. You know, this is our machine. We can do what we want with it. And it is an amazing machine. So we have to do our best to enjoy it, but also to use it to its maximum. And that means allowing ourselves to really explore our own awareness of what we're able to do, what we want to do. And I think that's where sometimes people get kind of taken away from. They look at sport and or high performance in a very different kind of a view. They're like, okay, well, this is what it has to be, very scientific and da da da. And I'm like, well, if you look at any, even as a, like an inter-county player or anything like that, they're all individual people with their own weaknesses going on, their own challenges going on, their own stuff in the background, and they're trying to forge their own path for that. But if they wouldn't be at that point if they hadn't at least seen a bit of their own individuality and their own ability to express that individuality. Because if they were just stuck in a team mode and they were quite boring, then they probably might not get there, you know? Yeah. I think that's one of the big ones for the general population, is we need to allow ourselves to look, okay, what do I want to get from this? What do I need to get fitter for myself or for somebody else or so on? And a huge amount of the time, it's like, look, if I'm not getting fitter for myself, then that's a waste of time. I'm just trying to force it for everybody else, you know?
Yeah.
And I think one of the big things that you mentioned earlier on was that the most important thing we can get is that buy-in from ourselves. As people, you know, and try and really build that over time. And it just takes us as coaches to have the ability to give them good air cover and good, kind of guarding and be that extra layer of safety for a lot of people, because they can be quite under pressure to do that. And they nearly put themselves under more pressure to do that, you know?
It's that's very interesting, you know, your take on that there. Yeah, I totally agree. You know, I think nowadays also, if we touch on the social media, It can be an absolute nightmare for me, and I suppose the genre of people that I work with is a lot of women, and you know, their whole image of what they need to be is distorted just from watching, you know, people on Instagram, and it's not the full picture. It's not, you know, we all know this. We've all heard harping on about it, and I try to tell them that too, like, you need to stop trying to be somebody else, because you're never going to be them. You know, you have to just try and bring it inwardly and concentrate on you and what you can be. And even as you said, like, individually, I see people in my classes, again, being frustrated. And I feel, you know, I'm guilty of it too. If you coach me and say, right, Kathy, we're going to do sprints. I hate sprints. And I say, ugh. But there is that little bit of competitiveness in us all, which can be a good thing.
Oh, yeah.
But I always say it's the ego. Why, like, you know, if I'm the last one in the sprints, I'm probably going to be a little bit embarrassed, you know? I'm going to be a little bit, you know, you can use that in a good sense to push yourself, but you've got to ask yourself, why does it matter? You know, why do you want to be first, you know? And I think ego, you need to quieten that ego and, you know, be humble and be appreciative for where you are. And also, as you said, everyone has unique capabilities. Now, if you put me into a burpee challenge, I'll probably smash it. Yeah. And so I find myself constantly saying that to people, because, you know, in the classes and things, I'll do things, and I as a coach, I'm sure you can see some people are phenomenal at boxing.
Yeah.
They have natural talent, and I get off on it. I'm like, oh my God, they're so good at boxing. And it comes natural. And that same person could be horrendous sprinting, you know? Yeah. And you have got to, as you said, you can't, you know, try and fit into a box and one size fits all. You have to appreciate your own unique abilities and strength. And even with boxing, I think there's a lot of passion involved in boxing.
Yeah.
As you said, it's you know, people's own backstory. And, you know, some people are just so passionate and they use it as a tool to get things out. You know, but it can be any sort of an exercise. But I do appreciate what you're saying, in that you can't just rock up to a team sport and be this high level performer without playing to your own strengths, I suppose, you know. And I would agree with that totally.
No, I think exactly. And I suppose that's where, like, from a team perspective or like a high performance sports perspective, it's obviously there's a lot of other factors going on and the whole lot. But on a base level, for all of us, regardless of whether we're unbelievably high performers or not, we still have to come home, have our dinner, like, do the very basic stuff. Like, we have to put the clothes on and wash them. Like, nobody gets away with that. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Nobody. And that's one of the things that even thinking about it there is, in, like, I saw a picture a while back, and it's basically just you would have this line of people in behind you over generations that have brought you to this particular point. So it's likely you have hugely innate abilities that are sitting there undiscovered, and we just have to keep trying to find and explore them and find out what we're at. Like, I think that's one of the big things, is that we get used to, and I think like you mentioned earlier on, life's extremely short and we're very conscious of that, but each day seems to be really, really long sometimes, you know what I mean? Yeah. So we kind of go, it's a very different, challenging dichotomy to kind of look at. So utilizing this time as appropriately as possible is key. But I think as humans, naturally, we're going to allow a lot of time to slip away. And it's very difficult to try and reconcile that. So we have to, when we have our hour to play with, then we can really introspectively look and kind of go, okay, and this is discovery time now. Let's see what we've got. And you might only pick a couple of things, fine, but like, we're always mining for gold, as far as I'm concerned. And it's there's a lot more mining than there's gold found, you know. We just have to be patient with the process of getting the mining done and kind of digging in and going, okay, look, I'm not gonna find huge progress in the first couple of weeks, maybe, but in week five, this avalanche of progress comes and I'm like, oh, what's going on? You know? And that happens, I think, with a lot of people. And that's where, at the moment, especially when we've had this huge pause, we've had this huge chance to go, oh, well, actually, hold on. Somebody hit pause on the remote and we're able to go, oh, well, those of us who are in a fantastically, like, you know, good situation, we have huge ability to go, okay, well, this is exactly where I need to go. This didn't work. This was good. So it's a great off season to kind of look at and go, oh, okay, well, this is important. This is what I need to work on next. This is what I need to keep more of an eye on and so on. And like you mentioned about your nephews and stuff. And I met my my sister and her family yesterday. I haven't seen them, I'd say, months. Like, and they only live in Ocala, like, and I have more and more. Wow. But it's like Christmas was the last time. And now one of the lads is playing hurling, and like one of the girls is really tall. And we're like, this is just so mad. Like,
yeah.
But I think that's a big one, because it will definitely give us a good perspective on how to change things. Now, a lot of people are going to go back to the same type of a setup. They're going to come back out of this and they're like, nothing happened. Everything was under control. And, you know, the same kind of, I suppose our mentality is going to be under pressure always to conform, like you mentioned about social media and things like that. And it's up to us, I think, as coaches, and it's up to people individually to just consistently allow ourselves to be ourselves about it. And whatever your voice is going to resonate with a huge amount of people. And I had a lady on recently, Jer McTavish, and she's like, look, a lot of people are only going to resonate with your particular voice. Like, literally, they're only going to like you talking. They don't give a damn about somebody else. They're like, look, certain people only like you as a coach. They don't care.
You know what? I use that phrase all of the time. And that's, I really agree with that. I say people buy into people.
Yeah.
You know, it's like anything, hairdressers or anything. Person you like, and I always say that, you know, and I won't be for everyone, and that's fine. No. But I do think that I do anyway, personally. If I like a person and what they're about and their values, like, I will support you so much.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I bang on, you know, what she said, you know, people.
Yeah, I think that's a huge one. And that's one thing I've noticed a lot more is the, and this is going to tie into my kind of second last kind of question, Odd, is our favorite coaches and like the people that we have really learned a huge amount from and taken massive lessons from. And she's one of those people, and like yourself, who immediately, if we haven't talked to them before, immediately put people at ease and are able to kind of steady the conversation and slow things down a little bit and take the pressure out of the shoulders and the neck and just kind of calm things and, you know, just have a nice conversation about different things. And it's a huge piece because, like you mentioned, people might be apprehensive. They might be very conscious of themselves and their inhibitions and stuff. And it's essentially, we just want to be those people to break down the barriers for a lot of people. And it starts with breaking down our own barriers or having them broken down by fantastic coaches. And I'm sure you've had lots, but could you give me a shout on a couple of people that have hugely impacted your coaching, not necessarily maybe locally, but even just like in the world in general or in your learnings or anybody in particular you really like?
No, it was funny because I was thinking about that. And to be honest, I wouldn't have a lot of names that jump to me, not because there aren't phenomenal coaches out there, but I tend to just look to coaches or people in general. I'm inspired by people that are just living a really inspiring life. One of the people I always kind of turn to is, and he's not necessarily a coach, but at the same time, Damien Brown, I'm sure you've heard of him. I nicked his burpee challenge. He came up with that in the first place. Now, he's not a coach by trade, but, you know, at the same time, he uses his voice to push people and encourage them, and he's phenomenal. I was supposed to be doing Everest Base Camp with him. He was doing the Everest full climb in April, I think it was, but obviously that was all canceled. He's rode across the Atlantic. Like, for me, even though he's not a coach per se, he inspires me by how he lives his life. You know, he has no fears. He's very humble, you know, in his nature. He's not doing things for fame. He's doing it for the right reason. Like, people like that inspire me, and I learn a lot from him in that sense. You know, I look to people, I adore people who are very empathetic, who are kind. You know, I know it sounds a bit cliche and stuff, but that's who I like. That's, you know, for me, that's what drives me. I'm in this, I believe, for the right reasons. I want to help people. That's my number one goal. And if I could do it for free, I would do it for free. You know, for me, I just feel like if someone is in it for money or for fame or whatever, it's just not the right reason. I mean, obviously people need to make a living, but I have come across some phenomenal coaches. I mean, I worked with, the only coach I really worked with one-on-one was Jared Masterson. Now he's a different, style. It's really the bodybuilding industry and things like that. But his knowledge of the body was just incredible, and his knowledge on training, like, he taught me a lot in terms of just, you know, the time under tension and just all that whole bodybuilding style. Now it's not something that I practice now, but he was a phenomenal coach in terms of just knowing about the physical body. But I have come across a lot of people. I mean, I have Pádraig McDonagh and Sharper Fitness and his sister Aoife. They're just lovely people, and they're in it for the right reason. You just can take it, you can feel from them that they would do it for free, you know? And that's what I love in a coach. I love someone who cares. I love someone who's has empathy and who wants the best out of people. And that's kind of really who I look towards, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think they're all great people, and really, 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 really serious operators, to be fair. And I think that's one of the big things is the people, like you mentioned, a huge amount of not necessarily just coaches, but like the people that inspire us are the ones that we're really going to learn a huge amount from, and we can take daily lessons from, and that in turn fuels our enthusiasm and our consistent consciousness of, okay, we want to get better at this. And I think that's one of the big things is we want to, I suppose I have more books than sense now that I haven't half read, and I'm trying to do this and this, and I'm like, okay, look, some of these books are going to get read, some of them are not. Some of them are just not, like, you know, like they're not appropriate for
gathering dust. I have plenty of books.
Yeah, exactly. And
you get a lot of knowledge from conversations, you know, just from talking to people and life experiences. And, you know, going back to what you said, people are unique, and everybody has their own story to tell, and everybody has their own hardships and tragedies and challenges that they face and overcome. And, you know, sometimes I feel a bit guilty when I see people again on social media influencing me, and I'm doing this course and I've read 80 books this week, and I'm thinking, oh shit, like, I've literally been watching Fireman Sam this morning with Freddie. And, you know, but if you can tune in and connect with people and listen to their stories, you know, people can teach you more. As I said, it's the college of life, you know?
Yeah. No, I agree. I think that's one of the big things is we have to find out what works for us so that we can help the people that we can help. Like, if we don't know what we want to work on or what we want to help people with, then we're going to hugely struggle with the ability to actually help these people. Like, we're going to be using this false sense of security that we should be able to do this and da da da. Like I mentioned about the books, like, there's some of those that are going to be vitally important for me, and there's certain ones that I consistently go back to. Consistently, and I'm like, okay, I don't need this extra one, and I'm like, okay, you know what, I'm probably gonna give this away, because it's the more I get into it, the more I become aware of what I need personally to help people, it becomes quite different. And that's, like you mentioned, it's more conversations. Like, I've learned a huge amount from this conversation, all of the conversations that I would have, and there's already five or six things straight away that I'm like, okay, I'm stealing those ideas, sorry. You know what I mean? Hugely. But it's a massive thing, because it's then a case of, I'm not going to steal them immediately, but I'm going to go, okay, that's going to make a huge difference to my adjustment of this particular thing in my life, this particular way of talking to somebody. And it just helps all the time to have those people, though, especially inspiring us. Like, one of the biggest, I've always found that one of the most interesting words is the inspiration word, because there's going to be that little light bulb for all of us to try and make big change in it. And it's meeting people that are really, really interesting, like yourself and Damien, all these kind of guys that just give us that extra cover, you know, that that allow us a bit more space when we have ego issues or when we have confidence issues or something like that, that they go, look, do you know what? There's a huge amount of people that are using their voice very authentically. And they're like, look, this is me. This is fine. And that gives us a huge amount of scope and space to breathe a bit and go, okay, do you know what? We can go whatever way you want. It's fine. You know,
I mean, you have to be authentic and people see through that. If you're not authentic and you're not living your own truth or your own life, people just don't buy into that. I certainly don't. And those are the people, as I said, that I admire, people that just are true to themselves and they're trying to live their best life, you know, for lack of a better term. But it's that's where I draw inspiration from, is people who just get it as well, who know that life is short and it can all be over in a second. And you have to be doing what makes you happy daily, you know. You've just got to wake up every day and just feel that you're doing the right thing. If you're in a situation that you're not happy in, you know, it's life is too short to be in that situation, you know. You know, it's difficult. It's difficult to change. It's hard, you know, when you're stuck in a situation. Sometimes people who are not happy in themselves and who are, I suppose, unfit and things like that, it can be hard to take that step and make that change. But I think that's our role. If you get in contact with that type of a person at all, I'm on it straight away. I'm trying to encourage them and push them and give them that belief that maybe they're not getting from another place, you know? And that's how I try to live my life, is to encourage people and to not be so hard on themselves as well. People are really hard on themselves.
Desperate. Like, I think we're all guilty of that though, because
100%,
we have that nervousness of like you mentioned about the whole social media, and it's just a general, I think, obviously as we get older, we're like, now I completely appreciate 80-year-olds going around swearing at everybody, going, I don't give a damn. You know what I mean? Now I'm very, very acutely aware that they're much smarter than
me. I make it that far, for sure.
If you get that far, you get to 100, like, you don't really give a damn. You know, you're like, yeah, whatever. But that's exactly it. Like, we have to just have find our own kind of way on it. Cathy, I won't keep you an awful lot longer, but do you have a next kind of adventure that you're looking at, a next coaching step that you'd like to get into, a return to bodybuilding, or you're going to become a mountain climber now, or are you going to go back to watching lots of Fireman Sam, just be really good at that? What's the deal?
Well, that's on the agenda a lot these days. I don't know. I feel for me, I think that I definitely wouldn't go back into the bodybuilding style of things. I learned a lot from it, but I think it was too, for me personally, it was very image focused, and, you know, it is a sport, absolutely, but I think I am too consumed and it wasn't good for me. So now I try to, my motto and my main ethos is all about how you feel. You know, you got to feel good. And so from that, I'm going to probably, if I do challenges, it'll be more trying to encourage people to do things, take up things like the burpee challenge that I'm doing at the minute.
Yeah.
It's just to get them to do something that makes them feel good, that gives them confidence, that has a knock-on effect in their life. And so that side, yeah, absolutely, I'll be doing more challenges. Maybe with a dream of mine would be to go maybe to, you know, build schools in Africa and things like that. I'd love to get the tribe and get them to buy into that, to help people, obviously. Fundraising I'm allergic to for a while because I don't want to do that right now. But I would also like to do, perhaps down the road, tap in a little bit more to the psychology, sports psychology. I'm really interested in that. And also eating, nutrition, emotional eating, that kind of thing. I have a big interest in that, eating, disordered eating and things like that. I probably down the line will look into things like that.
Nice, excellent. So there's lots on your plate. So that's going to be a good next while, at least. Good busy one. Cathy, where can people get in touch with you if they want to work with you, which is very likely they will?
I am mostly on Instagram. TikTok, I have ventured into. This is the new thing.
Not yet myself, a little bit, but not much.
Oh, I don't know. So Instagram is, I am on Facebook at Kathy Stritch PT. It's a hard one to spell, but Instagram is mainly where I hang out.
Cool. Yeah. So the burpee challenge is kind of ongoing at the moment on Instagram. And I think, how far are you into this one, this current one?
I'm 7 days in. I lost a day or two, but it's about 8-9 days. A lot of them are on 8 or 9 days. It's a 14-day challenge.
14, yeah, I think it's so. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's so much fun. You need to do it.
I'll see how it goes. I'll give you a shout on it. Yeah, I'll try and get stuck in. But so, Kathy, that's fantastic. I'm gonna leave you off. Have you any recommendations of things on Netflix that you've really been enjoying or anything like that at the moment that people could kind of click onto, or is it just kind of on your page to head to?
But on Netflix, wow, I tend to watch terrible stuff. I'm into those. Detective murder things, which is a bit crazy. My partner thinks I'm mental. He reckons that if he's found dead someday, to come after me.
I think the same of my partner. She does the same thing. Don't worry.
It's a weird thing. Yeah, it fascinates me. But yeah, no, not too much into that side of things, really. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's all good. It's all good.
I'm no good on that recommendation, unfortunately.
That's all right. Not a problem. Kathy, it's been phenomenal to talk to you. And thank you so much for joining me. It's been a really, really good chat.
Not at all. Yeah, my first podcast, and I was nervous, but it was definitely on my bucket list. So I'm glad I did it. I really enjoyed it.
Great stuff. No, I really appreciate it. And thanks a million for joining me.
Thank you.
All right, folks, so you've just been listening to episode number 57 of the Humble Coach Podcast with Kathy Stritch. First of all, I want to say a massive thank you, folks, to Kathy for joining me. It was a really, really great chat, as you guys all heard. So I wish her the best with all of her her coaching. And I want to say again, a massive thank you to her for taking the time to join us and give us really, really good insight into a lot of things I think that we can utilize in our coaching and our lives in general. If you would like to check out any of the other episodes on the Humble Coach Podcast, you can check us out on Podbean, on Spotify, on iTunes, or pretty much wherever else you get your podcasts. I want to say a final massive thank you to everybody for all of the support. The Humble Coach Podcast has been ongoing for 3 years now. We just celebrated our third year anniversary. So thank you very much to everybody for joining us on this lovely little journey. And we're going to continue it on for a good long time to come. So hope you guys have a great day and see you soon.